Hello and welcome to the Common Good podcast. I'm David Clancy and with me today is Frank Hardy.
Hi, hi David.
Hi Frank. Frank's a local politics teacher and Liberal Democrats member, I think.
Yeah, member and activist, yeah.
Yeah. And today we're going to talk about Brexit, not surprisingly. So to begin with, I think it might be worth us being transparent about our Brexit voting history. I voted Remain.
Yeah, and I obviously, as a Liberal Democrat, voted Remain as well.
True. So before we get started, I thought it'd be worth just having a quick whistle-stop tour of how we got here. So Theresa May took over from David Cameron after the referendum. In March 17, she triggered Article 50. In December 2017, May agreed to the Irish backstop in the joint report with the EU. May's Chequers proposal for the future relationship was in July 2018. And then last month, May landed a deal with the EU, the withdrawal agreement and political declaration.
Yep.
The withdrawal agreement is a legally binding divorce deal of
it's a treaty, right? Yeah.
Yeah, 585 pages, with a non-legally binding, loosely defined vision of what the future relationship might look like, the political declaration.
Yeah, correct.
So, just today, I mean, we set up this podcast to discuss the vote on Theresa May's deal, and she's pulled that vote today because she obviously can see she's not going to win it. So what are your thoughts about that, to begin with, Frank?
Well, I think, it doesn't surprise me in a lot of ways because I think one of the things that we've come to learn about Theresa May is that actually she does change her mind quite late on at the last minute. Well, you can see that with the 2017 election. Mm-hmm. She somehow seems to get through kind of things that you don't expect her to get through. And some say this is just kind of kicking the can down the road because there has to be a meaningful vote at some point. There are kind of disagreements about when that has to be by, whether there is this kind of 21st of January deadline or whether or not that can actually be extended or not. But there has to be a meaningful vote at some point. So it does feel to me a little bit she's kind of doing it to kind of save her skin. But every time she's done some kind of quirky out-of-the-box move, she's managed to kind of put off the inevitable. She seems to be the longest ever dead woman walking. But actually, so maybe it's a clever and calculated move from her part. I don't know. We'll have to see how this all plays out.
And I suppose it's another example of where she will say, well, we're not going to do that. For example, we're not going to have a general election and then calls one.
Yeah.
We are going to have a vote and then pulls it.
And also, she seems to have more lives than cats, you know. It was only a few weeks ago that, you know, the Jacob Rees-Mogg's of this world were sharpening the knives and it was going to be a vote of no confidence. But somehow she's managed to kind of limp on, and you know, Teflon Theresa is quite an interesting play, really.
Yes, but of course it's partly because of the complexity and difficulties of Brexit that any leader would struggle, and I think there's certainly in the Conservative Party that anybody coming in would face the same set of problems.
Correct. Yeah, and I think I think we're going to come on to have a look at kind of possible scenarios a little bit later on in the podcast. So I don't want to dwell on that now. But I think you know, just changing the Prime Minister or changing the Conservative Party leader doesn't necessarily mean that we end up with a different Brexit.
No. So let's have a quick look at the divorce deal that May has agreed with the European Union. And just briefly, what it entails are three main things. It has citizens' rights, the bill to the European Union of around £39 billion, and the Northern Irish backstop. It also provides a transition period to the end of 2020 with a possible extension to 2022, where the UK has the same privileges and obligations as currently. It's acting as if it's an EU member. However, it is no longer an EU member legally, and the UK has no say in any EU policy or rule changes.
So no elections to the European Parliament and things like that, correct?
Exactly. Yeah. And it's during, I think one thing that some people perhaps aren't aware of is that it is a withdrawal agreement. It isn't anything to do really with our future relationship apart from the 26-page non-binding declaration. And so this transition period is really a period in which to do the negotiation for the future deal. And come up with turn the political declaration into a concrete legal agreement.
Yeah.
So I suppose the key question is, why is this so unpopular? I mean, she's pulled the vote today. Why does not enough people like the deal that May's brought back?
Okay, I think there are two questions here. There's the question of why don't MPs not like the deal? And then there's a question of kind of the country at large. Mm-hmm. Let's take the MPs at the moment. There is a view, I think the issue is that Parliament is so fractured at the moment. There are lots and lots of different factions within Parliament, all wanting and fighting their own corner. And because we don't have a majority government in place, that adds to the confusion and adds to the issues that everyone seems to think that they can kind of get their own kind of version of what they want. There are those on the kind of the hard right of the Conservative Party, the ERG, kind of the Jacob Rees-Mogg's
European Research Group.
European Research Group, which are kind of a right-wing faction of the Conservative Party, who really view essentially no deal as better than what May is proposing, or the withdrawal agreement.
Which is May's mantra for quite a while herself. No deal is better than a bad deal.
Correct, yes. But May obviously believes that her deal is the right deal.
Yes, now that it's her deal, that's better than the bad deal.
Exactly.
Than no deal, rather.
So you've got kind of those on the real hard right. Some of those ERG members actually want some kind of halfway house, what we call maybe a Canada Plus option, which looks at the relationship that Canada has with the European Union on trade and a kind of a free trade area, basically. So some would say no deal, you know, World Trade Organization rules is the best. Some of that ERG group and maybe some other conservatives are looking at more like a Canada or a Canada Plus scenario.
And just to be clear, that Canada Plus scenario, it's a free trade deal.
Yeah.
Where we would have to come out of the customs union so we could strike such deals.
Correct, yes.
And so that would have, we can talk about this later, but that would have an implication for the Irish border.
Correct, yeah. Yes. And those on the far right of the Conservative Party argue that that's not a problem because there are technological solutions that can be found to solve that Irish border problem without having a hard border, but customs checks away from the physical physical line between Northern Ireland and the rest of Ireland. So
they're happy with no deal, a free trade agreement, but they're not happy with this deal that May has brought back.
Correct, because it aligns people too closely in their eyes to what we've already got. I think there's also an issue with the backstop and the idea that the backstop, which kind of goes after any potential extension, would leave the UK as a rule taker and not a rule maker, basically.
Yeah, so it's probably worth just being clear about that. In the transition period, as I mentioned earlier, we will be acting as an EU member. When we get to the end of the transition in 2020, we but only for a couple of years to 2022. If at that point we don't have a free trade agreement, like the Canada agreement or some other free trade agreement, then the backstop kicks in.
Correct, yeah.
So the ERG and people like Jacob Rees-Mogg are worried that that backstop will kick in.
Correct. And but the important thing about the backstop, and this is the crucial aspect, is that the UK, under the backstop arrangement, does not have a unilateral right to withdraw from the backstop unless we just tear up the treaty. And that would lead to a hard border in Ireland anyway. So this the issue becomes that we are at the behest of the rest of the EU if we enter the backstop, and that's unacceptable to the ERG and the right of the Conservative Party in particular.
So it's probably worth just saying what the backstop is. I mean, it was done to comply with the Good Friday Peace Agreement of 1998 to avoid a hard border in Ireland. And the backstop, as has been agreed between the EU and the UK government, is that there will be a single customs territory covering the EU and the whole of the UK, not just Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
But Northern Ireland will have membership of the single market for most goods in Northern Ireland, but the rest of the UK won't. And therefore, there will need to be regulatory checks on goods moving from Great Britain to Northern Ireland.
Okay. And I think that brings, I suppose, on to the really nice point of the next group of people that are kind of objecting to this, to May's deal. So you've got the hard right of the Conservative Party for their own reasons about being kind of law takers rather than lawmakers. The May's kind of partners in government, if you like, or the confidence and supply partners, the DUP, the Democratic Unionist Party, they're the next group that object to this because what they see this as is effectively a slippery slope to potentially a united island where you've got one set of rules for the island of Ireland and one set of rules for the rest of the United Kingdom or Great Britain and effectively a border in some senses in the Irish Sea.
Yes, no customs tariffs because it's a complete customs union around the whole UK, but regulatory checks.
But regulatory checks. And even to the point, and I think there was a page in the withdrawal agreement that mentions the fact that products would be labelled differently, that you would have, you know, soap that was produced in Northern Ireland and it would say UK in brackets Northern Ireland, whereas we'd have to label things differently. And for most people, they wouldn't mind about that. But I think for the DUP, who are obviously a strongly unionist party, that's kind of unacceptable and potentially a slippery slope.
Mm. But what's interesting for both of those groups, the Brexiteers and the DUP, well, the Brexiteers are happy with a no deal, right? They're happy for a no deal to go through. I'm not sure about the DUP, but as you just touched upon, if there is no deal, then a hard border will have to be put on the Northern Ireland island border, right? So it's interesting to me that although the Brexiteers say they've got a technological solution to the border, that wouldn't be a solution on day one in the end of March next year. So it seems as if the Brexiteers are willing to have to take a risk with that border. I don't know about the DUP.
The DUP, I find their position very, very strange, to be honest, because they actually campaigned to leave the EU. They were the only Northern Irish party to do so. And the majority of people in Northern Ireland voted to remain. And so I think this may come up, and I may be jumping ahead, but we can certainly talk a little bit about this later in terms of the general election option. I find this a really, really good reason why I think a general election won't solve things, because the majority of MPs in Northern Ireland are Democratic Unionist Party MPs. Save the fact that Sinn Féin don't take their seats, but still, a majority out of the 18 members of Parliament from Northern Ireland, 10 of them are DUP members. Yet, the majority of them voted, the majority of Northern Ireland voted to remain in the EU, but the DUP campaigned to leave.
Mm.
So I think this idea that a general election will kind of sort it out and parties will put their clear kind of manifestos about their position on Brexit, I think is a bit of a misnomer, because people in a general election vote for completely different things and completely different reasons. You might vote for your local MP because you like your local MP. Whereas I don't really see that as a kind of a viable alternative. Just look at the result in Northern Ireland, I think kind of brings that up quite loud and clear, really.
So let's move on to another group. I mean, it's also, May's deal is also not popular with more pro-European parties. So the SNP, the Liberal Democrats, pro-European Labour and Conservative MPs, the Green Party, only one MP, of course, and Sinn Féin, as you mentioned, who don't take their seats in the House of Commons. So why don't those pro-European groups like the deal?
Okay, I think the SNP has got two objections to it, and I think it's worth just kind of mentioning. SNP, although they are broadly pro-European and have come out in favour of a people's vote and potentially a second referendum, I think one of the issues that additional issues for the SNP is that if Northern Ireland is kind of getting this special deal under a potential backstop solution, then they're saying, well, Scotland voted to remain in the EU, why can't we have this special deal too? So I think we've got to be careful that the SNP are kind of playing that game as well. Also, there's a bit of angling for a second, independence referendum, perhaps.
Yes.
You know, and although Nicola Sturgeon doesn't have a seat in the Westminster Parliament, she's been kind of using all the tools at her disposal in Holyrood to kind of make those kind of noises. So I think the SNP have that agenda going on as well.
But of course, it's worth saying about the SNP, the most obvious one is that every district of Scotland voted to remain.
Correct.
And the overall vote was, I think, 62% remain and 38% leave. So, I mean, the whole of Scotland is remain territory.
Of course. And so they're supporting the general call for remain.
Mm.
And I suppose there are those, and I think there are a mixture. I think the Lib Dems are kind of leading the charge on this, but also some, you know, the kind of the Dirty Dozen backbench kind of Conservative MPs, the kind of the Anna Soubrys and Dominic Greaves of this world, started out as a dozen, but I think actually increasingly growing in number. You know, the schools minister that resigned the other day.
Do you mean the universities minister?
Minister, that's what I mean. Yeah.
Yes, this is the group that one of the newspapers called the Saboteurs.
Yes.
Another group of, the Saboteurs, Dominic Grieve and co.
Exactly. So yeah. they've kind of hijacked or kind of advanced this people's vote view with essentially the view that actually remaining in the EU is better than May's deal. Some of them view like Sarah Wollaston, Dr. Sarah Wollaston, for example. Her thing is not about whether or not she believes in Remain, although I think she does and probably would vote to Remain. There's a more constitutional principle that of informed consent. And the idea is that when we voted in the referendum 2.5 years ago, we didn't know the we knew the journey, but we didn't know the full extent.
Didn't know how we would leave.
How we would leave, exactly. And that actually, as a doctor, as a medical doctor, she would say, you know, you might say, yes, I want a medical procedure, but then once you find out what the side effects of that medical procedure are, you can then have a choice whether to still go ahead with that procedure or not to go ahead with that procedure.
Indeed.
And that's her argument, really. And I think there are a few in Parliament that say, well, yes, May's deal might be the best way of leaving the European Union, but it still needs the consent of the people.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose Aliva might argue that they were offered an in-out referendum, and I suppose that really falls on Cameron's shoulders. He didn't really think through anything. He didn't think through anything beyond a Remain vote, really. Okay, and then I suppose we shouldn't forget, and maybe I should have said at the beginning, I'm a Labour Party member as well as a Remain voter, but even as a Labour Party member, I'm a little unclear on what the Labour Party policy is.
I think that's an understatement.
I'm being kind. I've been transparent, and now I'm being kind, and it's not very clear. And so I think the Labour Party leadership, I think it is fair to say they see the chance of getting into government.
They're playing an opportunist card, right?
Yeah. Okay. So that's why people don't like it. Now, there's lots of different scenarios that can happen with this vote. And we've already got to the first one. The vote's been postponed.
Yeah.
But it's worth saying that however these scenarios play out, if none of them get a majority, then the default position and the legal position is that we leave the European Union on the 29th of March next
Correct.
Year.
Correct, yes.
Because that is already an act of Parliament.
Yes.
So the vote's been postponed. It looks like May is trying to renegotiate the deal. How much joy she will have with that, who knows? She might be able to get more done on the political declaration, because it isn't a legally binding treaty and is quite loosely worded already. And this is a difficult question. What do you see happening now?
I think if anybody, I want to just put it out there, if anybody says they know what's going to happen,
has a crystal ball,
then they're lying to you. I mean, we're in total unknown territory, institutional crisis, really. And I think every kind of trick in the book is being kind of played. What I do think is that there is a majority in Parliament to stop no deal.
Yes, and I think the Dominic Grieve amendment has made that more likely, right?
Correct.
Because it allows Parliament not to instruct, but to suggest to the government that they take a different course of action.
Correct.
Which it would be hard for the government to ignore.
The problem I've got, and I just want to draw back to a problem that the Labour Party had when they were in government, over something like House of Lords reform, actually. We had this strange scenario in Parliament where we had several votes on how to reform the House of Lords, and there was no majority for any option, even the status quo. So when there was no majority for even the status quo, we ended up with the status quo. And as you quite rightly said, the status quo is that we leave the European Union on March the 29th. I just hope that, and now I'm talking about my hopes, not necessarily what I think is going to happen, I just hope that we don't kind of sleepwalk into that. I don't think we will, because I do think there will be enough members of Parliament to kind of put the brakes on. But whether we end up with a general election, whether we end up with a kind of a referendum, a renegotiation, I don't think we're going to get a substantially renegotiated deal.
No, I would not expect so either. Presumably because if this deal is voted down, then there's still a chance of a second referendum, still a chance of Remain, which would suit the Europeans, right?
Correct, yeah. And I can't see, after 18 months of hammering out this deal, there being enough changes to satisfy enough MPs in the House of Commons. I just can't see that happening.
No, and it seems that Theresa May believes, and you'd think she has the inside track on this, having tried to get it through Parliament, she seems to believe that it's the Irish backstop which is the main sticking point. And not surprisingly, the Irish government are standing firm on this.
And yeah.
The European Union are standing firm behind the Irish government. So it's hard to see how there will be much change on the backstop.
In fact, I mean, this evening, the little bit I saw before coming here was that you know, the EU is not going to get rid of the backstop. And it was really interesting to hear Theresa May's words earlier today. She said that she was going to seek assurances.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't sound like, to me, that anything fundamental is going to change. It's tweaking, it's clarification, it's not fundamentally either removing the backstop. And I think that may win over a handful of MPs, but on the basis of, you know, of what we've seen, she was going to lose the vote by, you know, 300-400 MPs. And I don't think that's going to...
By 300-400?
Yeah.
Really? I didn't...
That's yeah. Well, if the whole of Labour were going to vote, and then about 100 and something Conservative MPs were going to vote, plus the SNP, plus the whatever, I think it was going to end up something along the lines of 200-400. So maybe 200, maybe even 150, 450. That's 300 MPs, kind of.
Which in normal times is a hard... such a huge defeat, would most prime ministers would resign, right?
Correct. Yeah,
but these aren't normal times.
No.
So we don't know really.
We don't really know. I mean, I think, and this may be interesting. And we touched on this earlier. I don't think a general election is either wanted by the majority of MPs. And I don't think it's going to help the situation.
No.
I don't think we've got time to have a general election.
Well, we've got a bit more time to have a general election as opposed to a referendum.
But correct.
But when we think back to the 2017 snap election that May called, Brexit wasn't really discussed. Now, it may have been that it was going to be discussed in the last week, and then the Manchester bombing occurred and it took a different course. But in the first 3 weeks of that campaign, nobody was talking about Brexit.
It was about austerity, care.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that. But no. It would be a bit surreal at this point in time to have for somebody, either Theresa May or through one of these other mechanisms, to have a general election, and then for Brexit to be hardly discussed. And of course, the Labour Party would then also have to come clear about what its Brexit policy was, and up till now, it certainly hasn't.
It's fudged it, basically.
Yeah, it's let the Conservatives kind of stew in their own.
And also, fundamentally, we've got the issue that Jeremy Corbyn is probably a Brexiteer, you know, ultimately.
Yeah, he's lukewarm about Europe.
At the very least. So I think that becomes quite difficult. And look, even if you did have a general election, and even if it did provide a decisive result, which the polls are not suggesting that it's going to, that we're going to end up probably with a very, very similar House of Commons to what we've got at the moment, pretty much. You know, maybe a few MPs here one way or the other. I don't think we're going to end up with a majority government. Then we just kind of, we've wasted... Yeah. A kind of a period of time, and the clock's still ticking. And so I can't really, plus the difficulty of the Fixed Term Parliament Act for it to actually kind of be enacted, I can't see a general election actually happening. I think that is and in fact, Ben Bradshaw, the Labour MP for Exeter, was on Radio 4 this afternoon talking about why that is almost the least likely option.
Because it needs a two-thirds majority in the House, doesn't it, to have an election, which May got quite easily back in 2017, because I think the Conservatives thought it was a great idea at the time to increase their majority.
Correct.
Didn't turn out that way, of course. But now it's probably a different story.
Yeah.
So we might be looking at some point in the future. I mean, unless it's there's a major renegotiation, which, as we've just discussed, doesn't seem likely. General election may not move us forward. Then maybe the kind of most likely scenarios are no deal, although the Dominic Grieve amendment has made that less likely.
Correct.
Or a second referendum. But of course, that would need an extension of Article 50. But as you mentioned, just today, that has been confirmed that, well, we wouldn't be able to extend it, we'd be able to end that process.
Yeah.
And if we were going to have a second referendum, the European Union would probably extend it, agree to extend it.
So they'd probably agree either to extend it or we can revoke it and then start the process again. Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, we've run out of time, but that was an interesting discussion. We will find out in time what happens.
We shall see. Who knows?
Yeah. Thanks for your time, Frank.
No worries.